The ground rules, we want you to be here no later than 7:30. That, in fact, that door's locked. It's not a drop-in. It's, you know, you get here on time and we'll hopefully leave on time. Hopefully. It is not a discussion meeting. It is a lecture. It'll be up to the presenter. If he wants to entertain questions or anything, that'll be strictly up to the presenter. The material will be factual. I noticed that Dick brought in his conference-approved literature, and that's where it'll be coming from. Any opinions are those of the presenter and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, you know, you can get off on, you know. But I hope that we'll, you know, all enjoy this and we'll all gain something for it. There will be tapes available. Now, Chris says that you have to attend 3 sessions in a row before you're eligible to get in. And so whatever 3 that is, he's got a running head count out there. He knows all of you. If there's any proceeds that come from the tape, we're going to distribute them appropriately. We will pass out baskets at the end. And are there any questions before we get started? Anybody don't know what their role is or anything and like to clarify it, you know?
That door needs to be closed right over there.
That's Duck's job.
Yeah.
Howard Webb is a sergeant at arms. You know, if anything happens, he... and like I say, we want you here by 7:30. We're going to start exactly at 7:30, and we'll try to end on time. So I'll present, let's do the serenity prayer first. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. I present to you Dick Wright.
I thought you'd have more of an introduction than that. That's a kind of humbling. That's a little humbling not to get a better introduction. Any one of you want to ad lib and give me a little more pitch than that? I normally get a little bit more than that, even though I tell them to, you know, keep it short. I need to introduce myself, but I wanted to know how I was going to do that because there seems to be, I get some information from my sponsor who's over here about how I ought to do that, and I ought to be open about it, so I don't want to shield anything. So I will tell you that my name is Richard Wesley Wright, and I'm an alcoholic. I got my first name from my uncle. I got my middle name from some couple of famous Methodists, and my last name, I'm glad to say, is a carry-on of the family tradition, I guess. And I'm an alcoholic because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, primarily helped by these 12 traditions, the fellowship with you people, the love from you people, and the God of my understanding that the program and you people introduced me to and permitted me to cultivate a relationship with. It hasn't been necessary for me to have a drink of anything or anything like that since October 17, 1965. And I'm grateful for that, and I know a lot of other people that are too. As Lou said, I'm going to speak, and I guess on the other, this is an august group of people. I feel humbled by seeing who's going to be here. As he said, I'm going to speak from my perspective of the first tradition and some of the other things that I'm going to talk about tonight. And that's based on my interest in the tradition, some studying that I've done about the tradition, some experience that I've had in the program. I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't speak for my home group, which is the Indian Trail Group. I don't speak for any other groups or any other members or any of my friends. If you can't find justification from what I talk about tonight in some of the conference-approved material, I suggest you just forget it and don't bother to even think about it, okay? I'm going to reference some conference-approved material as I go along, and if you're interested in where those things come from, have something ready to write down, and I hope that maybe you'll go to that particular reference and look up about what I was talking about, and it will create interest on your part. It'll help you get a better handle on it than just listen to me talk about it. And it'll be more meaningful to you and more important as you try to attempt to apply the traditions in your AA life and in other things if you care to. I love the traditions. I love the program. You know, I was in a church meeting one night that I was chairing, and I used the term principles above personalities. And you know, the people's eyes just went like that. And a couple, three of them came up afterward and said, that was profound. But I couldn't disclose where it came from. In fact, I didn't even take credit for it, but I know that'll surprise Bill that I didn't. I want to give you a little bit of introduction. Listen, they told me, I heard an announcement last night about this thing. It was the first one that I'd heard. It was made at the Matthews Group. And Nancy T. got up and made it, and she said that she'd heard that it might last an hour and a half. It's not going to last an hour and a half on this night. It may some other night, but not tonight, okay? Because I don't believe that the mind will absorb more than the rear end will endure. And there's no way that I can stretch the first tradition more than an hour, quite frankly. A little introduction, if I can, to the traditions. There's some history in them. By 1945, AA membership had grown to probably 25,000 people from two. Group problems at that time had been handled by correspondence from AA that came to AA headquarters and had been handled by correspondence from AA headquarters where the files, as Bill says, bulged with information that people from groups had been sending in. Now the basic ideas of the 12 traditions came directly out of this vast amount of correspondence. An AA friend of Bill's at that time suggested that all this experience and information could possibly be codified, and from it, a set of principles could be developed that could offer tested solutions to these problems and that others could use. When Bill set about the task of doing that, it became obvious that some of the traditions were really already in place. They'd kind of found their way into the various groups and were being used. And so this made them truly traditional. This made what we're going to talk about tonight in the next 11 weeks truly traditional. Bill was the person who interpreted and called the meaning from these experiences that bulged the files. He's not the author of the experiences themselves. But he's the one that put them into written form. And this really comes out of Pass It On, pages 305 and 306, if you're interested in looking in there. He says that these 12 traditions protect us in two ways, against ourselves and against the world outside. Now, you're going to hear me say this again in a few minutes, because sometimes I think we feel that the traditions are really only for helping us get along among ourselves. But Bill said there is another equally and maybe more important side of the traditions, and that is to protect us against the world outside. And he says in the 12 and 12, in the foreword of the 12 and 12, he says this about the traditions, Bill does, AA's 12 traditions apply to the life of the AA fellowship itself. They outline the means by which AA maintains its unity and relates itself to the world about it. Again, you see, he talks about the other part, the other important thrust of the tradition, when he says not only maintains its unity among ourselves, but relates itself to the world about it, the way it lives and the way it grows. Page 15, the 12 and 12. The traditions are guidelines. You get that? Guidelines. That's not an opinion. Guideline is defined as something that shows the way and steers. It shows the way and steers. This is important. Bill said that, and pass it on page 306, he said, had they been laws, rules, bylaws, or regulations, they might never have been accepted by the membership, as they obviously have been. In AA Comes of Age, page 96, he says, implicit throughout AA's traditions is the confession that our fellowship has its sins. We admit that we have character defects as a society, and that these defects threaten us continually. Our traditions, he said, though, are a guide to better ways of working and living. And they are to group survival and harmony what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. In a pamphlet AA Today on page 11, he said this, the AA traditions are neither rules, regulations, nor laws. And he seems to support, again, that they're guidelines to show the way, to steer. He says, we obey them willingly because we ought to and because we want to. Perhaps the secret of their power lies in the fact that these life-giving communications spring out of the living experience, out of living experience, and are rooted in love. Again, he says about the fact that they're guidelines and not something else. He says in 12 and 12, page 129, the 12 traditions are which guarantee AA's unity contain not a single don't. They repeatedly say we ought, but never you must. Bill has said many times that we need to interpret in our own lives the 12 steps and in our group activities throughout AA, the 12 traditions, reasonably well. Reasonably well. He didn't say we had to interpret them perfectly. He said reasonably well. Guidelines, not rules, not laws, not regulations, not bylaws, to show us the way and to steer us. Times have changed from the time that the traditions were written. They were written in 1945. Bill started to write them in 1945. And this is an opinion. So I'll tell you when it's an opinion, and you can write down in your notes, OP, or something like that. Opinion. If you can't find any support for this and what I give you in the future here tonight, simply disregard it. Now, I think times have changed, and we need to use these guidelines to help steer us in 1998. Remember, they were formulated in the mid-1940s. They were formulated to help AA survive the midst of threats and disunity of that day. In the mid-1940s. The threats today are not the same. Plus the fact that we got a 50-plus year track record and a heck of a good one to support the fact that we can use these guidelines to steer us and to show us the way and to help us with the particular threats of whatever time we're using the traditions for. They were hammered out on the anvils of experience, Bill said. The traditions were hammered out on the anvils of experience. He says the distilled experience of the first few years. Now, we all know about distilled, what the distilling process does, don't we? It gets stuff down to its purest form, okay? So they were hammered out on the anvils of experience. This is totally unlike the rules and regulations and bylaws and guidelines even that some other organizations on the outside may use. You know, these things are normally put together before an organization is ever formed. A couple of people get together and they decide they want some sort of an organization to do some sort of thing, and they sit down and they get two or three more with them and they sit around a table and they make the rules and regulations and the bylaws for that organization in hopes that it will permit it to do what they want it to do. Not so with the traditions. As I said, the files were bulging at the office in New York City. And it was from the experience that they had gained from the first 10 years, really, probably 7 or 8 years when there were groups forming of any substance, experience. And so they're not, unlike, totally unlike the other rules, regulations, bylaws, or guidelines that other groups may put together, because they're the result of distilled result of the experience of the first 7, 8, 9, 10 years of AA's operation. There's a logical sequence in the traditions. Tradition one is like its counterpart, step one, and it's the most important one. Tradition one is the most important one. We know that step one is the most important step. I know that if I don't admit unconditionally and accept that I'm powerless over alcohol, it isn't going to do me much good to worry about a power greater than human power or making decisions or taking inventories or doing anything like that. The same thing applies to the traditions. They're written in logical sequence, and tradition one is the most important one. And we're going to, I think we can see that as we go through them. It's going to say unity at all costs, and that the other 11 traditions show us ways how we can preserve that unity. That's a quote out of the 12 Traditions Illustrated pamphlet. The traditions are contrary and contradict customary public policy. They're contrary to and they contradict customary public policy. That means that I shouldn't go out here and look at another organization or another group or some corporation, or that I should expect a high-paid consulting firm to come in and do an analysis of AA's tradition and how they work and get some sort of a logical answer. I can't. These things are contrary to other rules, other bylaws, other things out there in the corporate and social area that surrounds us. So we ought not to look to these other organizations, that says, for any help to apply the traditions for Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't get it. They're contrary. You'll see when you go on that we don't lift any people up. Corporations love to lift people up. We don't affiliate. Corporations want to affiliate, need to, must affiliate We don't accept outside financial help. Show me an organization out there that won't. You see, we're contradictory. They're contradictory to common practice out there. So we shouldn't look out there for any help in interpreting them. Another opinion. No, it's not. I got some basis for that. One group may interpret and apply the traditions one way, and another may interpret and apply the traditions entirely different. Okay? That's why the guidelines. One group can apply and interpret and apply them one way, another group may interpret and apply them entirely different. Either may be successful. If your own group is successful, that probably means that you're interpreting and applying the traditions correctly for your group. It doesn't mean that every other group has to interpret and apply them the same way. If your group is not in unity and is not being successful, it may mean that you're not interpreting or applying the traditions correctly for your particular group. Now, we may think that the traditions are important, as I mentioned earlier, only to guarantee the survival of the group. So there are places where we can assemble and share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. While this is indeed important, there is another very important byproduct or another part of the reason for the traditions, as Bill has already said and I've quoted, that we have cultivated the attention of the public. By showing that we can band together and stay together successfully under these contradictory guidelines, 12 of them, contradictory, nobody understands them, or nobody understands how we can do it, okay? Because by showing that we can band together and stay together successfully, we've shown the public around us that they're valid, and we have kindled their acceptance and confidence in us. And that's exactly one of the reasons that Bill wanted the traditions, so that because he knew that they would create the foundation and the nucleus with which we would relate to the world around us. We've done such a good job with this of gaining the acceptance and confidence of the general public, the world around us, that that we've grown from where we were at two people in 1935 to. Who knows how many today, poor record keeping that we have, a couple of million plus, but it's been that way for a long time. I got an idea it's a lot more than that. Never have had an off year. Never had an off year, you know. Never, people call us, they want us, you know, they're happy to... churches are happy to tell its people that we're meeting in their facilities. We have done a heck of a job. Necessary for us to do it, because when you rely on attraction rather than promotion, it's necessary for you to have the confidence and to kindle it. But this part of the reason for the traditions has been extremely successful. Probably just as successful, maybe more so, than that part of the traditions which was designed to keep us functioning in harmony in groups with each other. The point I want to make here is that the traditions really have two thrusts, and sometimes we only think about the one, but the other one may be just as important, and that is to create the nucleus or the foundation of how we relate to the world around us. We've done a good job in that area. Tradition one, okay? You know what it says. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Now, I think if we're going to discuss anything, it's always good to look at some definitions so that we all understand and agree on what we're talking about. I don't think they're very complicated ones in this particular tradition, but the dictionary, you know what that is, that's another book, one of the other books. It's quite helpful. I pick out three definitions. The word common is defined as equally with or by all. Equally with or by all, says the, by all meaning the entire AA group, the entire group or AA as a whole. And when we talk about group, we talk about any AA function which involves a group of people doing AA's activities, whether it's your own home group, whether it's intergroup, whether it's subgroups of the intergroup, all the way up to the General Service Conference in New York City, where they attempt hard to adhere to these same traditions. Welfare, the state of health, happiness, and prosperity. The state of health, happiness, and prosperity. Pretty good definition of the promises, maybe. Unity, the state of being one. The state, quality, or condition of accord or agreement. Singleness or constancy of purpose or action. So three definitions. So I might restate the tradition this way, or you might be able to restate it. Not that I want to improve on it, and I'll deny that I said that I was going to do that if you say I did. You might go something like this: personal recovery, our welfare, the state of health, happiness, and prosperity that we have, which we all share equally in the fellowship, depends on groups living in accord or agreement with singleness and constancy of purpose and action. Restated. Maybe it's restated even better in the long form of the tradition itself, where Bill wrote this: each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. And I think we each have to remember this, because a little later on I'm going to speak about, and you're going to hear, as you, especially when you get down to Tradition 12, about personal ambitions in AA. And Bill's very pointed when he talks about personal ambition. So he says here, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you and me, is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first. Our common welfare comes first, because the group must survive, or AA must survive, or we will surely die. Can you imagine yourself trying to stay sober? How many of us tried to stay sober without AA, and how well did it work? Willpower works well. We've all tried it. Works equally well on diarrhea. We know that. And without AA, we'd have a lot of trouble. Perhaps you may ask yourself this question: how important do you feel the group has been, still is, and will continue to be to you and to your sobriety, or AA as a whole? How much has it meant to you individually in the past, means today, and will continue to mean in the future to your own sobriety? And what we're talking about here when we talk about the traditions is keeping that solid, so that all of our welfare, peace, happiness, contentment, prosperity, sobriety, we're able to achieve that. Pretty important. First tradition. I think groups are awfully important. I went to my first AA meeting in Burlington, North Carolina that Sunday night, 17th of October 1965, taken there by two men who refer to that episode as carrying the body. But I remember that I felt good there, as bad as I felt. Now, I didn't just squeak in under the guidelines of alcoholism or definition of alcoholism. They didn't, y'all didn't have to adjust any definition of alcoholism to let me in, and because I'm a real alcoholic, and if you've seen me walking nearby, down on Euclid from here, you would have detected that there was something wrong. And but when I went into that group in Burlington that night, I knew instantly that I was with a group of people who were different. I had got a hint of that afternoon when two men came into my life for the first time. But when I came with you people that first night, I knew that I was with a group of people who were different. Who were different. Not better, different. And if it hadn't been for the group or AA staying together at that time, folks, I'd have been dead. The next night at O. Henry Group in Greensboro, I felt the same way. I felt good. As bad as I felt good with those people. Bill and I often refer to the O. Henry Group as the typical old AA church group. You know, low ceiling. You go down a kind of a dark old stone stairway to get to it, down underneath the old stone church. You know, the ceiling's down about this, smoke's down this low. I felt good there because of the group and because of the unity within the group. I could feel it. Not better. Different, and I needed something different. I felt the same way every time I've been in an AA group or in a meeting with you people. Always good. People ask me, ever been to a bad meeting? No. I've been to some that weren't quite as good as others, but I never been to a bad one. Never been with a bad AA group, because it's always been strong enough to help me maintain my sobriety until I could get to the next one. Through today. I was at the Matthews group last night. I knew I was in some place that was different. Not better, different. With great people. Indian Trail the night before, Matthews the night before that, Queen City last Friday, Pleasant Plains last Thursday. You see, I still feel that way. Boy, I'm so glad that you folks have kept this thing intact so far so that I continue to feel just as good as I felt that first night in Burlington when I'm in the group. Bill does something in the big book from step four on that we might use wisely in the traditions. And each of the steps from step four on in the big book, Bill describes why we need to work the step or why it's necessary, how to work the step, and the results of working a step reasonably well. Perhaps we can apply the same sequence in looking at tradition one, to look at why we need to have this tradition, why we need to understand it, and why we need to, and why it's necessary, how we might carry out the intent of tradition one, and the results that we see or we can expect from adhering to this tradition. So I'm going to make a statement in why we need the tradition in the beginning, and this is an opinion, but I'm going to be able to support it, so don't redline me yet on it, okay? I come up with two terms about tradition one and why it's so important and why we need it. Unity at all cost, period. Now that's pretty narrow, but I think I'm going to be able to support that, so bear with me. I come up with another idea about tradition one. Unity on essentials, liberty on non-essentials, in all things, charity. Now, I came across that somewhere, and I thought it applied to this tradition. I wrote it down, the first tradition thing I ever did, and I thought it came from Bill, but found out it didn't. And I don't know where it came from, but I know some places where it is. And I was astounded. I continue to use it because I like it, like the way it sounds. I liked it when I first heard it. I think it applies to this tradition. The General Conference of the Methodist Church 2 years ago had that as its slogan. And when it came out, I said, aha, they took my slogan. Out in Denver they had it, or some Salt Lake, Denver or somewhere, St. Louis, I can't remember. They borrowed my slogan, but I've since found that it appears elsewhere, and if you want to find it locally here, you'll have to ask Lou or some of the others. They'll tell you where it is. Okay, why we need the tradition. 12 and 12, page 133. Here's what Bill said. The unity of AA is the most cherished quality our society has. The most cherished quality our society has. Maybe he's meaning unity at all costs. I don't know. Our lives, the lives of all who come, depend squarely upon it. Without unity, the heart of AA would cease to beat. Our world arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. The most cherished quality our society has, unity. Here's a letter from Bill in 1966 on page 98, and as Bill sees it, if you're interested, here's what he said. As the book Alcoholics Anonymous puts it, resentment is the number one offender. It's the primary cause of relapses into drinking. How well we of AA know that for us to drink is to eventually go mad or die. He said, much the same penalty overhangs every AA group. Given enough anger, both unity and purpose are lost. Given still more righteous indignation, the group can disintegrate. It can actually die. This is why we, get this, avoid controversy. Avoid controversy. Bill Wilson said that. I didn't. That's not Dick Wright. Bill Wilson said this. Another letter, 1949. Appears on page 297 in as Bill sees it. Though many of us have had to struggle for sobriety, yet never yet has this fellowship had to struggle for lost unity. Consequently, we sometimes take this one great gift for granted. We forget that, should we lose our unity, the millions of alcoholics who still do not know might never get their chance. He wrote that in 1949. So, you see, I'm one of those who might never have gotten a chance, because I came in after that. So he says, should we lose our unity, the millions of alcoholics, Dick Wright included, and a few others here in this room, who got here after 1949, who still do not know, might never get their chance. In another letter in 1949, page 229, as Bill sees it, he said, as sobriety means long life and happiness for the individual, you and me, so does unity mean exactly, not generally, kinda, exactly the same thing to our society as a whole. Makes this statement. Unified we live, disunited we shall perish. So I think that kind of supports my unity at all costs theory. Okay? I hope it does. If it doesn't, disregard it. I think Bill felt strongly about how important unity was. Do you know what disunity is? You know what it'll do? You know what disunity is and what it'll do? Think back. Think of some things that don't have anything to do with AA. I use the example of PTL because most people are familiar with it, but I think it makes a good and a sad example about disunity. I have no doubt but what the purpose of PTL was good. It wouldn't have grown to what it did. It wouldn't have ministered for whatever period of time to the people it did. Something like that doesn't minister to people who are already being ministered to successfully or satisfactorily. Okay? So it fills a purpose, I think. Yet we saw what happened. An incident or two here and there, disunity in the thing, self-destructive. Driving. Candy Leitner was the initial starter of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She was the mother of Carrie Leitner, a 13-year-old who was killed by a drunk driver. And after he got off on a light sentence, you know, she started this movement. But I saw a couple of years ago where there was unrest within Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and she got booted out as the president or the, whatever she was at that time because of some things. One included she wanted more money, but created disunity among the group. Still going, little glitch. Southern Baptist Convention. I don't pick on the Baptists. I'll get around to the Methodists in a minute. It just breaks my heart, really. It makes me sad to see a group get wrapped up in whether or not Disney is doing this or that, you know. And these are the kind of things, you read the paper and you go to Southern Baptist Convention, big deal, and I think you'll find 50 people who believe that the Disney position is strong and 50% of the people who don't. And that's disunity. And what happens when this occurs? What do you suppose all the members are focusing on? Are they focusing on the main mission of that convention? Their purpose? No, focusing on the Disney issue. You know, is it or isn't it? You know, disunity. National Rifle Association, another good example recently in their position against some particular weapons and some not. But I do use churches because I'm active in my church, have been a long time, and I use them as a good example. They're not immune to disunity, folks, in case you don't know that. They're not. I've watched so much disunity and junk go on in churches that it just makes me feel sad because their purpose is good. I had a preacher friend in Greensboro, great guy. I had a lot to do with some of my progress in life, and he talked about one of the first churches he went to, a little old country church, had a wooden floor, and there was a small congregation, and when he went there, they were in disunity. And guess what they were having a fuss about? They'd had a breakfast. And part of the group wanted sugar donuts and the other group had wanted plain. And they were polarized, you know. Here they'd sit on different sides of the aisle, you know, in church. And so he called them the sugars and the plains. Terrible. How many people are going to hear what they're supposed to hear while they're there if they're worried about that? They were also worried about the piano. One group wanted a piano on this side of the sanctuary, one group wanted it over here. He said, I couldn't get over. One Sunday I'd come to preach, be over here. Next Sunday I'd come over, be over here. One Sunday he came, somebody nailed it to the floor. Disunity, folks. Think, you know, read the papers today. Read the papers today, you know. Disunity. Republican Party's being attacked by the Christian Coalition over some issues, you know, and the Republican Party isn't going to go belly up, I don't think, but probably the Christian Coalition either, but somehow or another, you make your own list. Make your own list of what disunity does. What are the perils of disunity? Self-destruction. PTL. Just use that example. Don't use any other. Self-destructs. What are the perils of disunity in the AA group? Same thing. Self-destruction. That's why we need Tradition 1. That's why we need to use Tradition 1 in unity. How do we affect and apply the tradition? Here's what Bill says in... You know, see, I've answered the first part of my thing. See, why do we need a tradition? We need that tradition because without it, we can self-destruct. And without, and if we self-destruct, you and I, our chances of sobriety are slim. Enough. Speak for my sobriety. Chances of it are slim to none. How to affect and apply the tradition. Bill said this in AA Tradition, How It Developed on page 4, but AA cannot automatically preserve itself. Like personal recovery, we shall always have to work to maintain it. Here, too, we surely need honesty, humility, open-mindedness, unselfishness, and above all, vigilance. So we who are older in AA beg you who are newer to ponder carefully the experience we have already had of trying to work and live together. We would like each AA to become just as much aware of those disturbing tendencies which endanger us as a whole as he or she is conscious of those personal defects which threaten their own sobriety and peace of mind. For whole movements have, he says, before now, also gone on benders. And so he says here, he hopes that everyone in the program will be just as aware of those disturbing tendencies within the group that might create disunity as we are aware of our own disturbing tendencies, those of us who still have some. I know there are some who have none any longer, but those of us who still have some disturbing tendencies to realize what threat that is to my own sobriety. AA Tradition, How It Developed, page 4. It seems to me that Bill has made some pretty clear points, and this is why I have coined some of those ideas and phrases I use about unity at all costs. He says in AA Tradition, How It Developed, page 5, he talked about this. He talked about developing an attitude in Alcoholics Anonymous and group activities or as things that the traditions apply to. On unity, he says in there we could victimize ourselves by petty rules and prohibitions. He said we could victimize ourselves by petty rules and prohibitions. So I think that supported my unity on essentials, liberty on non-essentials idea. See, petty rules and prohibitions could victimize us. He said that on page 5 in AA Tradition, How It Developed. This is simply an attitude that we have. If we can get an attitude about unity and about how we can effect this tradition, it would be helpful. We need to avoid controversy. He said that. At least, I modified it a little. I said at least we need to avoid long-lasting and heated controversies. Okay? Anything, because I'm going to cover something down here and cover my tracks in a minute about minority opinions, etc. Page 97 and 98. In AA Comes of Age, Bill says some important things, and it's kind of some of you'll get some humor out of it because it shows how we get the idea that certain things might create great problems for us, and really those aren't the things that create problems for us at all. And it happened to them in the early days of AA. Here's what he said. He said that early fears, he says some of those early fears are almost amusing today. He said the first big one was that slips or relapses, that they would affect the unity of the group. He said that the first, At first, nearly every alcoholic we approached began to slip, if indeed he sobered up at all. Others would stay dry 6 months or maybe a year, and then they'd take a skid. This was always a genuine catastrophe. We'd all look at each other and say, who next? We're all afraid that alcohol might completely undo us. But today, we see tens of thousands of members completely sober for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. Slips are a very serious difficulty, but as a group, we take them in stride. Fear has evaporated. Alcohol always threatens the individual, but we know that it cannot destroy the common welfare. So that one went aside. The next thing, well, this doesn't apply today, but the next big scare was the out-of-bounds romance. That was back there. That's the well-known triangle. In the cases of more than half of our membership, the family relation had been distorted. Drinking had turned the husband into the household's bad boy and the wife into his protective and possessive mother. When this relation persisted after AA, the husband sometimes got the wandering eye. Fortunately, it doesn't happen anymore. Alcoholic women whose husbands had long since cast them off put in an appearance. Here and there, we began to witness explosions gathering around these situations. People violently took sides. They will. You know, imagine this happening in your group. You look at that. People will be looking at that. They won't be listening to what's going on to me. Be watching and see what's going on over here. Some of them before it think it's a great deal, trying to think, wondering what's going to happen next. Somebody else has got to, you know, they're upset because it's going on in a spiritual, in a spiritual atmosphere. Yeah. Anyway, whole groups got into uproar. A number of people got drunk. There were some throwing of rocks at the sinners. There were some throwing rocks at the sinners. We trembled for AA's reputation and for its survival, but at last we woke up to the fact that we were not having any more sex difficulties than other societies, and possibly less. We found that these situations would often right themselves if they were treated with patience and kindness. Patience and kindness, another couple of words. The sinners and the self-righteous eventually saw the folly of their ways. Most alcoholics whose wives had been through their terrible days returned to the straight and narrow. The Al-Anon family groups put in an appearance and did wonders for AA's domestic relations. So these experiences all conspired toward a good end. AA's present divorce rate is among the lowest in the whole world. It became apparent that the relationship between the sexes was not going to do us in after all, and our fears in this area subsided. And here's what he said. But like other societies, we soon found that there were forces among us that could threaten us in ways that alcohol and sex could not. Here they are. These were the desires for power, for domination, for glory, and for money. They were all the more dangerous because they were invariably powered by self-righteousness, self-justification, and the destructive power of anger, usually masquerading as righteous indignation. And then he gives us some things that tells us about some fears we ought to have as he sums it up, and he tells us what we might apply to be sure that we can achieve unity. He says, beware of pride, fear, and anger in the next paragraph, page 98. These are the prime enemies of our common welfare. I want to read that again. Beware of pride, fear, and anger. These are the prime enemies of our common welfare. Now he tells us what to do. True brotherhood, harmony, and love, fortified by clear insights and right practices, are the only answers. And the purpose of AA's traditional principles is to bring these forces to the top and keep them there. The purpose of the traditions is to bring the principles of brotherhood, true brotherhood. Love Bill. He just doesn't say brotherhood. You know, he says true brotherhood. Wants to make it really tough. Harmony and love, fortified by clear insights and right practice. The purpose of the tradition is to keep these to the top. Priority. Always top priority. Only then can our common welfare be served. Only then can AA's unity become permanent. In the 12 Traditions Illustrated, he says this about how we can help for working this tradition, making it come off. Each of AA's other 11 traditions explain one specific way to protect the unity of the fellowship and the AA group. This is why this is the most important tradition. The other 11 tell us specific ways in which we can pull this one off. You see, those early members quickly recognized power drivers as potential group wreckers. We don't have any of those anymore. They've gone. And they're still around. Oops. The members who are always sure that they're always right. No? Gone. The members who are happily ready to assume all the burdens of leadership and grimly unwilling to share them, let alone give them up. I love it. That's in the 12 Traditions Illustrated, that one that's got the comics in, you know, about the guys. I love it. Some of them in there, they're good. But I think the thrust of that is that we have to remember that the other 11 traditions, each one of the other 11 traditions, show us ways, specific ways, where we can maintain unity. That's a help for us carrying out the intent of Tradition 1. I think that we need to remember this admonition about the other 11 traditions as showing us specifically how we can keep unity. I think we need to remember this from two viewpoints, because we know that they can, but we need to look at another side a little bit, if you will, permit me to, because I have seen more controversy and disunity created by somebody table thumping one of the traditions, the other 11, than I have of any other of the many risks that either have impacted us or might impact us. I have seen more disunity in AA created by somebody table thumping a tradition than I have any other thing that I felt was a risk to disunity. I'm interested in the traditions primarily because of that. I went to one of the groups I went to in Greensboro was a Fisher Park group. One of the two men that 12-stepped me and took me to that first meeting was a guy by the name of Boyd Christopher. A key link in my sobriety. Guy saved my life. Saved my life. I'd been sober a few years, and Boyd was killed in an automobile accident, an unfortunate one. I carried him to his grave. Very sad day for me, a man who'd saved my life, you see. Boyd was on the board of directors at Hope Harbor, a Christian alcoholism ministry in Greensboro. And the obituary said, in lieu of flowers, contributions to Hope Harbor. The Fisher Park group that I attended made a $15 contribution to Hope Harbor. And a few weeks later, one of the members persuaded the secretary to let her have the program that night, speaker meeting. And she spent all of the meeting telling us how we had violated the affiliation tradition by making a $15 contribution to Hope Harbor in Boyd's memory. Somehow or another, I didn't go away from there mad. I went away from there puzzled, because I didn't know anything about the traditions at that time, and I thought surely there must be room in these traditions in 1970 or whenever it was to permit that without getting the group in any trouble or creating disunity. So I got interested, see, table something in the tradition. I could tell you another one, but I said I was going to be out here an hour, and I am going to be out here an hour. I'm not going to, but I had another great example when I went to, when I moved to Atlanta, shortly after I moved to Atlanta. And people who were thumping the tradition. And the Atlanta deal involved a fist fight in the group parking lot over whether they were affiliating, because they used at the company at the group picnic, somebody had found cups with Jack's hamburger logo on them or something like that. And you get my point now about how I think we have to be careful about these traditions. That some I've seen a lot of disunity created because of table thumping of some of the other 11 traditions. Okay. Does this mean that we ought never have any different opinions? Not at all. Bill Hitchens, who made an address, he was a former general manager of General Service Office. He's a longtime friend of Bill's. He was given an address at a delegates luncheon in Miami at the 35th anniversary convention. And he said this on unity. Unity seems to me to express very well the quality which sets our fellowship apart, for society at large has so many problems which either spring from or are aggravated by lack of unity. Society out there. We talked about some tonight. Yet I think that this unity concept is frequently misunderstood both in and out of AA. One thing it sure doesn't mean is that you must agree with me. I believe that we all have a moral obligation to speak our minds and stand up for our convictions. Any so-called unity which attempts to stifle dissent is no unity at all, in my opinion. His, not mine. Okay? So, he says, I think we must not only listen to others' views, but we must actively solicit and encourage them. Only so, I believe, can the informed group conscience speak, and you're going to hear about that next Thursday. Here's what he says, though. Listen to this, Hitchens. Once it has spoken, informed group conscience, once it has spoken, then all of us must have picked that up from Bill, must go along on truly basic issues. Consider, for example, our tradition of anonymity and self-support, two traditions. Few subjects in AA have been discussed so thoroughly over the years. Many members have questioned, disagreed with these concepts, and have voiced their views vigorously at the General Service Conference level. Yet, he says, when the overwhelming majority of us supported these traditions, almost all the dissenters went along. This is the meaning of unity, as I understand it. May it always be so. And I agree with this. We don't mean to stifle dissent, or we should invite everybody's opinion. What I worry about is that at the General Service Conference level, what he's talking about, when the group conscience spoke, everyone went along. I just hope that we can develop an attitude when something like this occurs in the group so that we understand the power of the conscience of the group. God expressing himself in the informed group conscience. And he will. I don't take your stuff, Lou. That when this happens, then we must, Hitchens says, fall in stride behind it. Not pout, not grunt our teeth, not be mad, fall in behind it. Those are some ideas about how we can effectively use and carry out the intent of Tradition 1. The 12th tradition is going to talk about the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, and it's going to use the term anonymity as the spiritual foundation. You're going to hear it discussed in 11 in a more specific sense about whether or not my last name or my middle name or whatever should be, and where I should handle that and why. But it's in a broader sense in Tradition 12, the anonymity that applies to all the traditions. And Bill's going to say in many places that anonymity the spiritual foundation of our traditions is really sacrifice. It could, you can substitute the word sacrifice for it in 12. And he says personal sacrifice, because each of the traditions, like each of the steps, asked me to sacrifice something personally that I normally wouldn't want to do, left to my own devices, you see. So, in fact, he goes on to say, he says that personal ambition has no place, no place in Alcoholics Anonymous. Personal ambition has no place in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I don't try to pursue my personal ambitions here, then I won't contribute to any disunity within the group, what Bill said. And we'll talk more about that at level 12. What are the results of effective application of this tradition? Great. They're great. Look around you, for crying out loud. How many people are here tonight at a traditions meeting? I can remember when you could announce a tradition meeting, have it up on the Nation's Bank, and see the Nation's Bank building down there, you know, and there wouldn't be three here. How's your group doing? Is your group doing good? Sobriety folks you're sponsoring doing good? How are we doing? We're doing great. I can tell you we are. All we got to do is look around us. And we've always done great. On page 125, and Dr. Bob and the good old timers, and it started right in the beginning. Unity started right in the beginning. Here's what they said about Bill and Bob. Bob was likely at first to express caution and prudence, to exert a quiet censorship when Bill expounded some radical new approach. Here are two guys, totally different. Almost a generation apart. Bob was 58, Bill was 40. Almost a generation apart. Quite often Bob made suggestions, and quite often Bill modified his ideas to fit in with Dr. Bob's. They moved toward rather than away from each other, a tendency that we take to be the AA way, to move toward rather than away from each other. Between these two men, there was a willingness to agree and act together when it came to doing the right thing for the fellowship that they both loved. Do we deny that we don't love the fellowship that keeps us here and keeps us sober? Just like them. Both were complex individuals, yet able to express profound ideas in a simple way. And there are probably more reasons than we can ever fathom for this ability, for the ability that they had to work together. Love certainly had something to do with it. We got that. Loyalty was another ingredient as far as Bob was concerned. We got loyalty. It's been said that he found it hard to refuse Bill, who was his sponsor, anything. Each wanted to agree with the other and was therefore flexible. There was also a good deal of practical thinking involved. As co-founders, both were shrewd enough to know that they had to be in agreement before anything could be done in and for the fellowship. So we can see unity between two men who were totally different right from the beginning through today. Page 234, AA comes of age. We give thanks, Bill said, to our Heavenly Father, who, through so many friends and through many means and channels, has allowed us to construct this whole wonderful edifice of the Spirit in which we are now dwelling. This cathedral whose foundations already rest upon the corners of the earth. On its great floor we have inscribed the 12 steps of recovery. On the side walls, the buttresses of AA's traditions have been set in place to contain us in unity for as long as God may will it so. Eager hearts and hands have lifted the spire of our cathedral into its place. That spire bears the name service. May it ever point straight upward toward God. Bill tells us in after steps 4 and 5 in the big book, where he also talks a lot about building something. He asks us after 4 and 5 to make sure that we haven't skimped on the cement, that we haven't tried to make mortar without sand. I think the same applies to the tradition one and the others, but unity especially. to check ourselves to make sure that we haven't skimped on the cement, that we haven't tried to make mortar without sand, and that the side walls, the buttresses of AA's traditions, continue to be set in place to contain us in unity, so that we may carry out our purpose, which is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's the one that's out there, doesn't know where we are, what we're about. That's the one who just got here, or just found out where we are, what we're about, and that's old timers like Bill, who still from time to time suffers. I want this thing to be available for my children if they need it, for my children's children if they need it, and for my children's children's children if they need it. You and I can help that become a reality. Thank you.
Thanks, Dick.
Keep that basket right there. You got one back there. You need another one?
Well, I hope all of you gained something from what we heard tonight. I know I sure did. I do each time I hear him do that. We'll be back next week. We encourage you to go back to your groups or go back, you know, form little groups and discuss what you've heard. You know, look, check behind him. Make sure he wasn't misquoting something. Or, you know,
do that.
Do a little research.
That's what I did.
Yeah. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 7:30, and hopefully we've got a few more chairs, so apparently if don't scare those people away, think we might stay an hour and a half, so we can fit a few more in. But thank you for being here. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm.